crossbar! And it doesn't go in! I'm buying a salmon, a spawning salmon!
Oh, 30 to 1. I don't see you or Robbie on it.
You love rainbows and ponds and things like that, the morning mist. It's what it sounds like, Speedy.
You're listening to Breakfast on FNR. Football Nation Radio.
It's great to have your company this Thursday morning here, Breakfast on FNR. It's Athos Syrianos here with Josh Parrish, and you've got us until 9 a.m. So plenty of time for you to get involved in the conversation. 03-9944-9999 or SMS on 0428-933-45. We're also live on Twitch, which is the place to be each and every morning from 8 a.m. and on some evenings, certainly tonight. Big, big day of action here at FNR. The state of our football nation from 5 p.m. with special guest, ex-Victory board member Richard Wilson, Josh, who did come out swinging a few weeks ago, and hopefully will have some juicy bits of information for us.
I think he might. I think he just might. He's been very vocal about his desire to sell his shares to fans, to give maybe a consortium, a fans trust, a real voice on the board with a 16% stake in the club. So if he's serious about this, and we've been through this before with the previous board member who left, and then it ended up being snatched up by private investors and existing board members. If he's serious, this could be a major milestone for an A-League club to have a genuine fan ownership stake.
And it'd be quite significant, with that club being the Melbourne Victory, the biggest supporter base. They speak a lot about how loved their fans. Well, we'll find out just how much. We're here this morning for Chef Good. You can get pre-prepared gourmet meals delivered straight to your door. And if you use the promo code FNR10, you get 10% off. We've got stacks here in the fridge. It keeps us from spending down at the cafes down at Harbour Town, ridiculous amounts on breakfast and lunch, and even dinner sometimes, we'll hear that late. So get in touch with Chef Good at chefgood.com.au. NPL football has returned, Josh, right around Australia. We kicked off with Victoria and New South Wales last weekend, and it's time to head over to Queensland for Friday night because that competition is starting as well. Simon Smale, one of the best commentators over there, does some tremendous work with the ABC as well, will be joining us to chat all things NPL Queensland, one of the rare leagues that actually got a full season in last year. They had many Victorians and New South Welshmen heading over there.
And returning Queenslanders from interstate.
We've poached quite a few Queenslanders here in Victoria. They got them back for 2020. It was a big campaign. Peninsula Power finished on top, but couldn't quite get the job done in the grand final. So Simon will have all that for us a little later in the program. We've also got a pretty big team of the week as well. Players who have returned from major injuries. And it's been a big week for the W League, or a former W League player in Rebecca Stott, who was diagnosed with blood cancer. So we certainly wish her all the best. And we have no doubt that she will fight this and hopefully get back very, very soon.
Well, she set the 2023 Women's World Cup, of course, to be staged in Australia and in her native New Zealand as a target for a return and real motivation for her to get through this. So we've compiled a list of players who've come back from the career threatening, who've defied the odds and come back to play some of their best football. And I think we are hopefully giving her a little bit of motivation as well, providing some other examples of around the world of people who've done the same. But she's showed a tremendous amount of courage to front up in the way she has and be so open and honest about her her illness. And our heart goes out to Rebecca Stott today, who is a legend of the W League.
Certainly would make any team of the decade, team of the century, even. She's that good. An integral part to Melbourne City last season when they went undefeated and we're all conquering, and has been part of some very, very good sides. So we certainly wish her all the best, and we'd love to see her in 2023 as well, especially considering, as you said, that World Cup is on home soil. It's been a big week in the A-League. We had some matches during the week. Very disappointed there isn't a match every night, because the action is just so good that you wish you were just watching football every night. But Central Coast just keep doing what they're doing. Melbourne City got a win as well. Is the table starting to take a bit of shape, Josh, or is it still a fake table like Mark Gruden said?
It's fake news. It's a fake table. Well, it depends on how many games you've played. Because if you've played 7 or 8 games, like Western United or City or Perth Glory have, then I think it's still a fake table. But if you've played 9 or 10 and you're on the bottom, then it's definitely a real table. Yeah. I'm sorry to tell you, Melbourne Victory, Wellington Phoenix and Newcastle, that's a real table, guys. And maybe the teams at the top will have some ground gained, but Central Coast continuing to lead the pack on 21 points from 10 games. It's just extraordinary, Athos. I didn't think the honeymoon would last quite this long, but it's unbelievable.
Well, we're nearly halfway through. It is a shortened season. I don't think there is the 27 rounds. I think it's got been cut down to 23. So we are just under halfway, and they are well and truly the leaders of that pack. You thought that going to Perth away may have been a bridge too far last Tuesday. Perth, as we know, informed themselves with all their strikers scoring each and every week. Diego Castro putting on a show the week before against Brisbane. But the Mariners went up there and did their thing. And despite a mini Perth resurgence, they hung on. And they're showing everyone that they are a force to be reckoned with. We're not sure how far that will go. But even for them to make the finals this season seemed a step too far. But they're kicking that door down with some very good performances.
Well, Matt Simon, the career renaissance he's having this year is absolutely extraordinary. And I don't know, you know, what he's been doing, training in the off-season during lockdown. Maybe he's been working on his juggling or something, because suddenly he's turned from a battering ram into a man of delicate finesse. The way he brought that ball down on his chest in a crowded penalty area and side-footed it calmly home into the bottom corner was a sight to see. And great to see Marcus Urrea, the Costa Rican import, properly get off the mark this season. He's had some good performances, but hasn't had quite that much luck in front of goal. And it's often been left to the substitutes to come on and win the game, the likes of Quoll and Bowman and Casella and others. But it was the starting strikers for the Central Coast who did the business in the first half to give them an unassailable lead, as it turned out. And despite Perth's dominance at home and despite their attacking firepower, they could not chase down that two-goal deficit in the second.
I do love how they can just put Alec Quoll on off the bench. He's everyone's favourite player, and everyone is low-key very disappointed when he doesn't start. And the ovation he gets on Twitter and at the stadium in Gosford when he comes on is electric. But you're right, they've got some depth now, the Mariners. You mentioned Bowman and Quoll. Those are decent players to come off the bench. And when you're playing as many games as they are, and when you've become the hunted, it's not a bad problem to have too many players capable of starting.
Yeah, absolutely. They've got plenty of depth, and I think at the moment the super sub kind of last half hour role suits Alec Quoll to a T, because that's when the game opens up and that's when he's the most dangerous. So you may as well get him at his freshest in the point of the game where he's going to make the biggest impact. I think that makes perfect sense. And the way Stojicic is using him plays to his strengths and makes him look as good as he does. Obviously, he's got bags and bags of talent. But at this point in his career, I think it's a perfect role for him. And he seems to relish it, the way he comes on and wins games constantly. Didn't do that on Tuesday night. But Bruno Fornaroli's been having a great season as well, just quietly banging in the goals
week in, week out.
Yeah, I mean, he's looking better than ever. And you just wonder, I mean, obviously City have got Jamie McLaren now. They're not really short of striking options. But you just wonder what would have happened if City had parted ways with Warren Joyce earlier instead of getting rid of Bruno Fornaroli in the way that they did and burning that bridge. Because he's such a club legend, and it ended on such a sour note. And, you know, now he's just one goal behind McLaren in the golden boot race and looking very, very good with his back to goal as well, combining with all those other attackers. I would personally, it might be a controversial opinion, but I personally prefer to have him than McLaren in my starting 11.
He's got those big hips that makes him very difficult to mark up against. And when he turns, you just feel it. You feel the earth shift, because he's a phenomenal player, and he's got such a lethal right boot. It's a flip of the coin for me, because when Fornaroli left, they pretty much got McLaren straight away, didn't they? Or they didn't waste a lot of time between bringing him in. So the writing was on the wall for Bruno, and they got a pretty good replacement in McLaren, who is in fine goal-scoring form as well this season. Both of them, I'm sure, will be leading that golden boot right throughout the season. So it could be a good question for the nation to answer. 9994999 McLaren or Fornaroli? I'm perhaps leaning more towards McLaren just simply because over the last few seasons he's been able to do it each and every week. He's scored 20 goals, I think, three times now, and he's a deadly finisher. Perhaps my kind of striker, perhaps someone who just is that he's that poacher. He's the best poacher in the league, and he gets into the right places at the right time, and I think that's just what I love about a striker. I don't know.
Well, Des Buckingham, the assistant coach for Melbourne City, who took the press conference in Patrick Kisnorbo's absence the other night.
Well, took the match in Kisnorbo's absence.
Yes, indeed. Paddy had suspected food poisoning and was now unable to front up for the game. But Des Buckingham gave us a little bit more detail than we're usually used to, talking about how much McLaren has worked on his build-up play, and he recognises that is a weakness in his game. He's very good facing goal, very good making runs in behind the defence, and of course, those poacher's efforts from close range have kind of become his trademark. But the actual combination play in earlier phases has always been a weak point of his. And apparently he's really been working on that in the past year and trying to play more of a role in the team than just scoring goals. But I still think Bruno Fornaroli, with his big hips and his big ass, the way he holds off defenders with his back to goal and plays in his teammates, has the edge in that department and has a lot more runs on the board. So McLaren's got a lot of work to do if he's going to match Fornaroli in that aspect.
McLaren does have a great supporting cast. Both of them have a great supporting cast. Would this Fornaroli work in, or would Fornaroli, as he is working this City side with Naboo, Luna and Noon, in contrast to the setup at Perth?
I think it might work better, to be honest. I mean, City want to play a certain style, and it's obviously inherited from Guardiola ball, and that's the City football group kind of brand now. And Guardiola was sceptical about a striker as good as Aguero because he felt he had shortcomings in that department. So they still really haven't found the perfect centre forward. Gabriel Jesus plays sometimes. Mm. Sometimes they play a false nine. Gundogan's played there a few games. But Man City have been able to trot on regardless of who they have playing up front. I guess Ferran Torres has played there as well this season. But I do feel as if Bruno Fornaroli fits the mould a little bit better than Jamie McLaren does when it comes to that style of play. And they've had to compromise, especially last season with Eric Mombarts. I felt he really compromised on his style of play because of the players he had available. To play to McLaren's strengths, he had to change his style. And that didn't really suit City's mission, I guess. So, you know, if anything, I think Bruno Fornaroli suits the club better. It's just, you know, internal politics and Warren Joyce that saw him pushed out.
It's almost a great irony that they got rid of the one guy who would have fit that City Football Group mould best. But McLaren is a superb striker, and as is Adrian Luna, and you throw Naboo in there, and they've got quite a potent front third. Very good on paper, and they've certainly shown what they're capable of on the field as well. I did feel for Naboo when he hit the post on Tuesday. I can't remember who gave him that. I think it may have been Noon who delivered that incredible long ball to him, and he took those players on as Naboo does and struck the post. It would have been the goal, I think one of the goals of the season. He's can land him in row Q or outside of the foot and slam home into the back of the net. So I think he will add plenty to that City role. He's almost, I feel, an upgrade for that Lockie Wales kind of role. I think that was an area that they were lacking last season, Melbourne City. And Naboo, as we know, he's a great A-League player. He's been to a World Cup with Australia too. So to have him in there is certainly a bonus for Melbourne City as they look to go a step further this season.
Yeah, I think Naboo has a lot to prove, to be honest. He was on big money at Melbourne Victory last season and he didn't live up to anywhere near the expectations. He wasn't fit half the time, and when he was, he really underperformed, especially his finishing was just absolutely awful. So he's got a lot to prove this season with Melbourne City after his kind of aborted move to Perth Glory. He couldn't get across the border and they ended up snatching him up. It's a great irony that, you know, the guy who broke through at Melbourne Victory as a youth player is now totally at odds with the supporter base, and I don't think that relationship will ever be repaired, and it will never go back because it just ended so sourly. The Melbourne Derby this this Saturday night is the perfect opportunity for him to absolutely stick it up the Victory fans who are going to give him absolute pelters. So I think it's going to be a slightly tense situation in the stands when his name gets read out. I wouldn't be surprised if he's booed every time he touches the ball. And, you know, he's got a defiant sort of personality, so that might actually suit him in a way.
Is he a better wide player than he is centrally?
I think he's good on the counter-attack.
He's got incredible pace.
I don't really know if the position matters. He's better if he's running towards goal. There was a fantastic goal he scored for Newcastle a couple of seasons back in their run to the grand final before he left for Urawa in January of that year. And it was coming inside off the right against Western Sydney Wanderers, I think, and he scored it with the outside of his foot into the top bins. And that's Nambu to a T, just sheer power and just directness and the audacity to try certain things that, you know, maybe 9 times out of 10 he doesn't have the skill to pull off, but sometimes it comes off and it's absolutely brilliant. So he's better if he's running towards goal. I don't think he works as kind of an out-and-out down-the-line winger, which is what Marco Kurz wanted him to play as last season, whipping balls into the box.
Because that final ball isn't quite as good as
perhaps
Marco Kurz thought it would be.
a lot of crosses going straight out of play. And he seems to go a little bit too fast for his own good and sometimes feels a little bit out of control. But in a transitional-focused team where he's able to have space to run into and go straight to its goal, he is a defender's nightmare. So it all depends on context with Nambu. If he's centrally, if he's out wide, even if he's on the left, I think it's just about the situations in which he gets the ball. And if he can pick up the ball in a few transitional scenarios or run in behind, with McLaren dropping shorter this season than he usually would to try and create space, then Victory will be in for some problems. But the big question for Victory is, who do they play against him? Because Dalibor Markovic has had an outstanding debut, but there's talk that Adama Traore may be fit to play. So who do you pick out of the two left-backs to face up against Andy Nambu, who's going to have more motivation than he ever has?
Well, I thought Markovic was Victory's best on ground, certainly in the first half. We were watching him play, especially when the game was so tight before it opened up in the second half and we saw, what, 6 goals in 30 minutes. But in that opening 45, he was sensational. He played that cutting ball through the centre of the park for the first goal. And I think based on form, you have to let him keep his spot. We're not sure how fit Traore is, and there is that risk that he will break down again, as is the case with every Victory player this season. Markovic has shown that he can stand up to the big occasion. He played in that game against Newcastle, which they lost, and I think we saw a lot more of him against Western United, who had the better team. They had the better forwards. His battle with Dylan Pirius, I thought, was sensational on the night. Two young guys giving it their all. And I think Markovic got the better of him. We didn't actually see Pirius looking as dangerous as he has throughout the season. And it's another big challenge for the young kid. He's up against Nambu, who is a veteran in the A-League and will be looking to make an impact. And I think if that is the matchup, it poses a very good narrative for the game.
Yeah, I hope personally that Markovic keeps his spot. I mean, there's an argument that Victory's backline is so inexperienced at this point, with Anderson and Stormaru and Lee Broxham being the only real experienced head in there, that you might want Traore for his leadership in the big game, in the pressure moment. But Markovic just has so much self-belief. He's got that confidence that some young players have, that I think Daniel Arzani had when he came into the A-League, that actually, yes, I can do anything, and it doesn't matter that I've played 2 games and the guy against me has played, 200. It doesn't matter, because I believe in my own ability. And that's the strength of some of these young players coming into the league, that they really do believe that they can do anything, and they maybe haven't been around the professional game long enough to experience the ups and downs and the disappointments. It's just been up and up for Markovic over 2 games and for his performances, and his confidence has got to be sky high. So I wouldn't be opposed to starting him at all, especially if there are any fitness concerns whatsoever with Traore.
And we know the schedule is quite hectic, so if you want to give Traore a few extra weeks off, maybe a few extra days off, then they're more than welcome to.
We'll split the time, 60 minutes, 30 minutes. It's a bit of a risk with Victory to try and do planned substitutions when you have so many injuries, but they've had their plans sort of foiled by first half forced substitutions, particularly in the Wellington game. But I wouldn't be opposed to to giving Traore just a cameo appearance off the bench to try and slowly build up that match fitness as well.
But speaking of, you named that back four there, that perhaps is the plan B or the plan C back four, but it's the one that I feel the fans gravitate towards to the most. They love Aaron Anderson. I love him too. I think he's superb. I would have had him over. I would have thought that he would start ahead of Dylan Ryan earlier in the season because he started all the games post-lockdown. It seemed like Grant Brebner really liked him, but he opted for that Dylan Ryan-Ryan Shotton combination, and as we know, both of them out injured. Partnering up with Lee Broxham, who is Mr. Fix-It, and, of course, Markovic. So those two boys, Markovic and Anderson, are certainly ones that the fans adore. They love them both. They came up through the ranks. So we would love to see them get more of a run, but, of course, in big games like this, you do have to consider the experienced players. But if Markovic, if the only thing keeping him out is his age, I reckon play him.
Yeah, if you're good enough, you're old enough.
Absolutely. If the only reason is because Traore is more experienced, then, I mean, form doesn't suggest that he needs to be dropped, Markovic. He's certainly earned his spot. If anything, he was in the Victory's top three in that loss to Western. So
I thought he was player of the match for Victory.
You'd be very harsh to drop him, certainly.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's ironic that injury has almost forced Grant Brebner to settle on the fans' preferred central defensive combination. That's what I don't get. I don't get how Dylan Ryan was starting ahead of Aaron Anderson in the first place. I mean, obviously, I hope he recovers from his injury, but it might even turn out to be a blessing in disguise because he's a loanee. Like, Victory don't have any investment in his development unless they've got some sort of future fee agreed for his services, which hasn't been publicised, and I think is unlikely. Willem Twe, I think, is the Dutch club he's signed from. So he's a short-term option. Same with Ben Fellaini. You're really under no obligation to try and develop these guys or give them minutes if they're not contributing to the team straight off the bat, whereas Aaron Anderson is Victory's player, and they can get a transfer fee for him if he performs well. So that they are way more invested in that outcome, and I have been totally puzzled why Brebner was so hesitant to play him until injury forced Victory's hand. You know, he's so athletic. He's got the kind of rugged qualities that you want in a central defender. I feel he's a lot more reliable than Dylan Ryan when it comes to getting beaten off the dribble. And he's not bad on the ball either. You know, maybe he doesn't have the composure of Shotton or Ryan, but I think he's good enough at this level to be able to play the ball out from the back. And he's been a threat off set pieces as well. So, you know, I don't see any reason why he wouldn't continue to start for the rest of the season, Aaron Anderson. Maybe Ryan Shotton is preferred to Lee Broxham when he comes back from injury because he is a foreigner, he is a marquee acquisition, and he has shown a degree of ability that some of the other players don't have in terms of how he brings the ball out of defence. And maybe Lee Broxham's role will be to fill gaps in utility roles throughout the rest of the season. I'm sure he could certainly stake a claim to being a more reliably defensive right back than Storm Roux. But, Aaron Anderson, I think he's a first 11 player, and I think it's taken way too long for Brebner to realise this.
Dalibor Markovic and Aaron Anderson, two players who the fans love to see and will hopefully see this Saturday in the Melbourne Derby, which hasn't really received a lot of love lately. Everyone's loving this Western United Victory rivalry, which has emerged, and we've almost neglected the Melbourne Derby, but we will get to that a little later on, and I'm sure it'll be a common theme right throughout the FNR programming today. We will take a quick break because Simon Smale, NPL Queensland commentator, to join us very, very soon to preview the season ahead this morning on Breakfast.
Off the crossbar! And it doesn't go in! Up like a salmon, a spawning salmon!
Oh, 30 to 1. I don't see you or Robbie on it.
You love rainbows and ponds and things like that, the morning mist. It's what it sounds like, Speedy.
You're listening to Breakfast on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
28 minutes past 8 this Thursday morning. It's Athos and Josh. We're taking you right through to 9 a.m. So get in touch, Football Nation, 03 99 99 99, or comment below on the Twitch or on the Facebook stream. Josh, it's that time of year, as you and I well and truly know, that the NPL competitions right around Australia have taken centre stage. You've called a few games. You're calling Oakley Heidelberg tomorrow, aren't you?
Yes, indeed, at Jack Edwards. Back at Jack Edwards, but this time for a proper home game. And Heidelberg playing there for the second time in the space of two rounds. So
they've played there more than Oakley this year.
Yeah, it's a funny situation, but hopefully Olympic Village will be ready before long and they'll be able to play a proper home game. This is their home away from home, but it's their away game. It's very confusing, Athos.
Well, we had Victoria and New South Wales kick off last week, and now we shift our attention to Queensland ahead of another exciting campaign. Simon Smale is one of the top commentators in NPL Queensland and has been good enough to join us this Thursday morning. Simon, welcome to the program.
G'day, Athos. G'day, Joss. How are you both?
Very well, thanks. It's a very different looking NPL Queensland this year, but all the more exciting. How was the league last season and how have the teams responded after a difficult 2020?
Yeah, look, it was a fantastic competition last year. I don't think there's any doubt about that. We had a really strong top four and possibly at a detriment of the rest of the league. I mean, the top four finished 14 points ahead of the team in fifth spot. But they played some sensational football, of course, bolstered by some top talent from down south who obviously weren't able to get their season underway. But it really made for a fantastic competition. We had players like Harrison Sawyer, Dan Clark, who of course were in action last week and combining for goals, I think, in the South Melbourne victory. Sasuku Sakia, who's probably one of the top players outside of the A-League playing in Australia over the last 3 years. So he was here as well. Marko Jankovic, Aiden Fedahagic. There were a lot of really good players coming up. But that just combined with the Queensland talent that's been up here for quite a long time. So it was really good. It made for a really compelling competition. And again, we had probably had a bit of a surprise champion in terms of Lions. I mean, they've been the benchmark club, and I don't just mean from a men's perspective, both them and the men's and the women's competition have really been dominated by Lions in recent years, but they did fall off a little bit last year and yet still managed to finish in fourth spot and make grand final and win the grand final. Peninsula Power were premiers. It was just a great competition.
Yeah, Simon, it's Josh here. It seemed as if Queensland kind of benefited from Victoria shutting down because a lot of the local boys went back home and even some other players who wanted to finish the season properly signed in Queensland. So we had so much of the Victorian talent flooding back up there. And it seems to me as if NPL Victoria kind of poaches Queensland local talent all the time because we can't seem to develop our own players. What is Queensland doing that Victoria isn't, do you think, in terms of youth development and NPL level? Because it's got me scratching my head, and it seems like Queensland might be leading the country in terms of youth development at the moment in both men's and women's football.
Yeah, it's a good question, Josh, because you're right. It's a bone of contention up here that all the best players seem to sort of graduate through all the academies up here and then sort of head and chase money stuff. I mean, you'll have Henry Hoare playing down for South Melbourne this year, who is absolutely one of the top players, has been one of the top players in the competition up here over the last 2 years. It's hard to put a finger on it other than just the clubs doing a great job with youth development. I mean, they're often giving youth players a chance as well, and I think that's a real bonus for a lot of clubs. There's teams like such as Strikers this year are going to be pretty key for that. They've promoted a whole heap of their juniors and they're going to really give them an opportunity under John Cosmina. So John Cosmina is getting back into coaching at Brisbane Strikers after he finished up with Brisbane City a couple of years ago. But even when he was at Brisbane City, he was really giving young kids a chance. I mean, Brisbane City's team, when they were finishing fifth, sixth in the competition, had an average age of about 20, 21. So there's a lot of young players coming through. And you're combining that with maybe one or two more senior players per squad. And that's the real thing. And it's about getting that balance. And sure, you're not going to have that consistency when you've got these young players. And I think we're going to see that over the course of this year. And we've seen it over the course of the last couple of years with some squads who have probably skewed slightly more youth than more experienced players. But other than just having a great group of players and a great group of coaches coming through those young ranks, I think that's probably all I can put it down to.
And tell us a bit more about this pathway into the A-League, because we've seen Warren Moon take that big step and he has made it, you know, very obvious that he will be looking at Queensland talent. He wants to build sort of what Adelaide United have done and build almost a state side just full of young Queensland products. I mean, how good is this for young players in the state?
are superb. And look, Warren Moon's been fantastic with Lions, both in the BPL and then when they made that jump up into the MPL. I mean, two-time premiers, they won a championship as well. And Mooney made it, as you said, has made it very clear. I think he gave an interview right at the start of this season where he said he believed in young Australian talent and believed in young Queensland talent. And you know, you can throw the Maroon sort of what flag waving out about that. But he really has put his money where his mouth is, if you like. He's given players an opportunity. Josh Brindle-South has been in the A-League before, but he's come up through Lions and he's seen what he can do at Lions and he's given him an opportunity in the A-League and he's done pretty well. As far as I can tell from this sort of slightly non-impartial observer, I do like Josh and he's a great guy. So it's great to see him do well. But we also had Danny Kim when the A-League resumed last year, who really came in and made his mark. And like you said, with Warren Moon himself as a coach coming through, it shows that there's a pathway there. And I think that's another real incentive for a lot of these players who are playing in the National Premier League's Queensland this year, to actually see that there's a competition pathway all the way through and to know that Warren Moon's looking is really key. And you've got some great young coaches as well, aside from Warren Moon, who've come through. Ben Kahn is probably one of the most qualified coaches in the country. He's still in his early 30s. Olympic, he's made three consecutive grand finals with Olympic. And I mean, we know that's a bone of contention because they just can't quite make that final jump to become champions. But I mean, he's a quality coach. And it's another, you know, there are options, I think, for both clubs in an A-League and who knows, maybe even in the second division.
There are two players that I'd like to specifically ask about because I feel as if they might have professional aspirations or at least professional potential and the ability to go further and might be on Warren Moon's radar. If you want to chuck any other names in the mix, feel free. But there's two guys that I've been watching from afar for a while, Jez Lofthouse and Andy Pengelly. Tell us about those two.
Jez Lofthouse is absolutely one of my favourite players to watch, probably overall in football in Australia at the moment, and has been for a couple of years, because he's one of those players that when he gets the ball and turns to face goal, you sit up a little bit straighter. You think something's about to happen. It's an overused cliche, but he's an excitement machine. He's got fast feet. He's got great technique, which was really honed playing futsal. So, and you can see all of that come through. And he's not afraid to have a go. He scored some fantastic goals. And even as a young man, you know, you can see the potential that he has. And yeah, I'd love to see him make the next step further in his career. And hopefully that would be with a Brisbane-based team. It's obviously a tough spot to get into the top flight and into the as a striker. I think, you know, you need to have a little bit of something, but he certainly does have more than a little bit of something, has to be said. It's a real pleasure to watch him play. Andy Pengelly is another player who is just superb to watch, a goal-scoring machine, a lot bigger than you think he is. I think that's one of the things that I always get surprised about when I see him. He's a real, he's got a lot of strength, but he marries that with some sensational skill, some sublime touches. And again, any player who sits in the forwards and just is able to get the ball to his feet, turn and shoot, is a player who you want in your side, and he's going to do fantastic stuff for Andy Pengelly. I think he scored a hat-trick in pre-season last week against the Indigenous All-Stars, or certainly has been finding the back of the net in pre-season, and that's a bit of a warning shot for a lot of other clubs in the competition as well, because he's a real handful, and I don't think we've really found a defensive unit that's been able to deal with him that well so far.
Well, it certainly doesn't look like that based on the stats. I mean, in 2019 for Brisbane Strikers, Andy Pengelly, in league and cup games combined, scored 52 goals in 34 games. And then coming back from Singapore with his brief stint with Lion City Sailors before the pandemic, came back and scored 14 and 15 for Peninsula Power. So, I mean, with stats like that, it's kind of a head scratcher as to why he hasn't been getting more A-League interest.
You're absolutely right. And that with his stats for last season, you know, he was coming off a fairly niggly injury, leg injury as well. So he was dealing with that a fair bit. I think it was calf, and then it sort of progressed up to his hamstring. He wasn't fully fit, and yet he was still able to produce those sorts of performances and score at that sort of strike rate. And he's one of those players, again, who he can possibly, you might not even know he's there for a little while. And not to say that he's not working hard, because he does. He busies himself around in the attacking half of the field, both defensively and in terms of making chances for everyone else. But then all of a sudden, the ball will come near him on anywhere around the edge of the box, and he'll fire it into the back of the net. I'm also told his free kicks in training are second to none. So I'd be like to see a little bit more of that from him this year, although I think he's got a fair bit of competition at Peninsula Paris to who actually gets the ball in those attacking situations. But no, he's a phenomenal player. And again, you're right. It's one of those, I guess, imponderables, isn't it? That there's so many players, or I say so many, but there's certainly a handful of players playing in the second tier, the nominal second tier at the moment, who you'd think would be worth a chance, or certainly worth a look at. And he ended up going overseas to get his opportunity professionally. He's come back to Australia at the start of the pandemic and has continued to show that form. Be interesting to see how he goes this year.
Simon Smale is our guest this morning on Breakfast on FNR. We're chatting all things NPL Queensland. Simon, you mentioned one of the big fish captured in the off-season, and that's John Kuzmina. He returns to Perry Park, a big acquisition for a big club. What will this appointment do for the league? And sort of take us through his history with the Strikers, because he has been there before.
Yeah, I think it will be pretty much 20 years since he was last involved in the Strikers. He was in the NSL as a coach with the Strikers, and he spent a little bit of time, I think, in the Estate League with them as well. And since then, obviously, he went on to do great things in the A-League with Adelaide and had a lot of experience there. He had three and a half years at Brisbane City a few years ago in the NPL, and on the face of it, they didn't make finals in that time. You know, you could probably look at that and go, oh, maybe that's not a fair return. But it is certainly fair to say that he brought a lot of young players through at Brisbane City. And when you look at the way Brisbane City have since gone, you know, they've struggled since he left, it's probably a fair reflection to say that they were overachieving with the players that they had and the players that he was giving an opportunity to. And that was perhaps part of the game. And Strikers have been at great pains to say that they're part of a long-term project now. They want to bring young players through, and they want to be that sort of development club rather than perhaps pay bigger money to some more established stars. And look, they have a very, very young team. They've signed a lot of very, very young players. I mean, I'm looking through the signings that they've been releasing recently. It's just young kids, essentially, that they've promoted from their academy and they've poached from various other youth teams around the state and even going north. I mean, they've got a couple of people from the far north. Casey Agnew from Southside Comets up in Cairns has come down, as well as players like Mitch Edwards, the goalkeeper from Brisbane City. Seb Hernando, who's a really top talent. I'd love to see him sort of settle at a club and under a coach like John Kuzmina really develop. He moved over from Mitchelton. He's jumped around a couple of clubs recently. But I don't think they're going to be challenging for finals. I don't think that that's really going to be their remit this year. But John Kuzmina is a big name. You know, having a player like John Kuzmina, like John Kuzmina in the competition certainly adds a little bit of interest. It certainly keeps those sort of things moving in terms of the greater, wider media landscape. And look, I think it's a very good acquisition for Brisbane Strikers, and I think they could do an awful lot worse. And with how they want to redevelop these young, talented players, well, this is a great opportunity. And he's proven with Brisbane City, I think, that he can do that really well. So it's going to be interesting to see. But I think, tentatively, I think it's a pretty good move for Strikers.
Really interesting to see Kuzmina back in Queensland. Let's talk about Peninsula Power. We've spoken about Pengelly at length, but not really about the team as a whole, who were the clear minor premiers but couldn't get it done in the final series. Have they kept the core of the squad together? Do you think they'll go around again and be title contenders?
Yeah, look, I certainly think they're going to be up there. As I already mentioned, the top four from last year, I think it's going to take something pretty remarkable to dislodge anyone from that top four. They've lost a couple of players. Certainly they've lost a couple of squad players. One of the big one, though, for me was Cam Crestani. So he's actually dropped down into the newly formed FQPL2. So what, two divisions below the NPL, with Caboolture to link up with his former coach, Terry Kirkham. Incidentally, Caboolture have actually built quite a squad for the QPL2 competition, so it might be worth keeping an eye on them, and they will be expecting rather than hoping to be promoted into the FQPL and then into the NPL. They've got grand ambitions, play out of a really good venue as well down there. But no, I think they've certainly got enough to still be in the mix, and they've certainly got enough players on their books to really cause most teams problems. I think it's going to be very difficult for any squad really to truly challenge. They've added Brendan White from Brisbane Strikers as a goalkeeper. They had a couple of pretty decent goalkeepers last year as well, it had to be said, but they did suffer from injuries. Michael McGowan as an experienced player to perhaps replace Cam Crestani. Xander Guy has also signed for Penn Power from Gold Coast United, and he's a really exciting player. Has a tendency to not be as involved as he could be in games all the time, but nevertheless, still a really exciting player. And if he's given a longer run and perhaps given a little bit more responsibility of potential power in what's a stronger squad than he had with him at Gold Coast United, it will be interesting to see how he develops. And they've also signed Jake McLean, another one of the players from Strikers who's moved on to greener pastures. So look, they are still a strong squad. The players they've lost, other than Crestani, possibly more squad players, but they're still there. Aaron Phillip did such a good job with them last year as coach. I still think they're going to be very, very strong and well up there.
We're talking to Simon Smale, NPL Queensland commentator. Their season is kicking off this weekend, so be sure to check them out wherever you can. Just before we let you go, Simon, Gold Coast United is a club that I think all Australian football fans are really looking forward to see, or at least have a keen eye on. They have a lot of their former A-League players back in there, either playing or in the backroom staff. Are they a bit of a dark horse this season? How do you see them in 2021?
Yeah, absolutely a dark horse. They've got a new coach, Gray Piddick, who has been involved in the NPL Queensland for a long time and has been hugely successful. He's one of the most successful coaches to come out of Queensland at this level for a long time. He was controversially removed from his post at Gold Coast Knights last year after one defeat, maybe. And I think that was probably only his third defeat in 3 years at Knights. So it was a bit of an unusual one, but look, he is a quality coach. There is absolutely no doubt about that. And I think we were all expecting him to land somewhere. And we knew that he lived on the Gold Coast. And once you start living on the Gold Coast, it's incredibly hard to live anywhere else, such as the fantastic lifestyle down there. And look, I'm pretty excited to see what he can do with an experienced squad that probably underperformed last year. But they've signed Reece Lambert from Capella Bar, who's a really good player, could really improve that squad. Jared Kyle, Paul O'Brien, those are two players that really suit Gray Piddick's style of play. They've been involved in the competition for a while. Adam Endean as well has come along from Gold Coast Knights. So he's strengthened that squad. Now, again, like I said, it will take something remarkable to break into the top four, but I don't think Gold Coast United can be written off under any measure this season. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see. And, of course, the derby now down there on the coast is going to be fantastic with Gray Piddick being involved in United. So you're right. They've got that soft spot, that affectionate spot in a lot of football fans' hearts. Who knows? This could be the season where they really, really step up and start to push for that final spot.
Well, I guess we have to ask you before we let you go then, Simon, about the other side of the Gold Coast divide. We have a lot of Croatian listeners on the station, and the Melbourne Knights have a club show. So their sister club, Gold Coast Knights. You mentioned the coaching controversy. It's never boring with Gold Coast Knights involved. Where do they stand heading into the season?
Look, they're hugely ambitious. There's no doubt about that. And they have made, you know, no secret, I guess, of what their ambitions are. So it's going to be really, really interesting to see how they go. They benefited hugely from the players coming up last year. Harrison Sawyer, I know you'd be well aware of him commentating in the NPL Victoria, and I think he scored last week, didn't
he? Yeah, I commentated the goal, in fact, Simon.
Yeah, I mean, off his chest, was it? It didn't look as
head,
tidy
shoulder,
as some
back,
of his guys.
Who knows?
Well, he's another player who can just score goals if he's just in the general vicinity of the ball in the penalty area. He can cause problems. So, yeah, look, without him, it's going to be pretty interesting to see, actually. And they haven't made too many signings, it has to be said, over the duration of the off season. But I mean, look, they finished last season so strongly because of Harrison Sawyer. They've got some quality players. Mitch Nichols is still there and thereabouts. Whether or not him being another year older, and he does have these little niggles here and there now that you wonder how much more they start to become real injuries as he gets a little bit older. So it is going to be very, very interesting to see how he goes. Marek Madlay, though, is one player they have signed. Now, we spoke about how many brilliant goals that were scored last year for strikers by Pengelly. Well, Marek Madlay scored 40 goals the previous season in the competition. He didn't have as good a year last year, and indeed the year before he struggled slightly, I guess, for a run of matches. If he can get a run of games for Knights, he is a phenomenal goal scorer, and he works incredibly hard, incredibly dedicated to his craft. They will be another really strong team to look out for, and you can't rule them off. And again, like we haven't really mentioned Olympic, and we haven't mentioned Lions either, who are the reigning champions, and you know they got ruled out last year. And they came through to win a championship. You cannot rule them out. Darren Syme, who was Warren Moon's assistant for about 5 years, is a player who is a coach, who has managed to get the best out of a very, very sort of condensed squad. They always have a condensed squad. They go for quality over quantity. Sometimes that can come back to hurt them when they have injuries, just like they did last year. But if they can stay fit, they're going to be in with a real contention. Again, Olympic, we've spoken about them briefly. They played the best football last year. There's no doubt about that. And yeah, you're right. That was helped by Sakir, who is freakishly good. I don't think there's any doubts about that. Some of the things he was doing on the pitch last year were extraordinary. But look, they've recruited really well. Zach Anderson's come in at centre-back. He'll replace Veta Hargic and sit in that role. You know, he's a player who's won an A-League championship and played all over Asia and indeed other parts of the world as well. Isaac Cernak, again, a player who's gone around in the A-League, an experienced player. They've signed some other local players as well. Alex Barlow, Shannon Brady. And they join a team that has Jez Lofthouse, Steve White, Daniel Leck, Jean-Philippe Lassen. That's a lot of quality, and I still think they're probably the team to beat if they can put it all together and keep it going for the whole season.
Plenty to look forward to in 2021 in NPL Queensland, and that Gold Coast derby is certainly all the more spicy this season as well.
Absolutely.
With all the controversy that's come their way. Simon, thank you so much for joining us this morning on Breakfast. Which game will you be calling this weekend?
I'm going to be at Lions Gold Coast Knights, which I am absolutely pumped about. I think it's one of the standout game of the round. It's just going to be a hugely exciting game. And I think that really will set the scene for how both teams both go. So, Saturday night at 7 o'clock Queensland time. That'll be definitely worth watching. Although I know that the NPL Victoria is also worth watching, Josh, and I'm sure I wouldn't want to take
you.
I tell you what.
It does not go head-to-head with any NPL Victoria games this weekend because everybody's decided to play on Friday night. We have six games on Friday night for some reason and one on Saturday afternoon. So who knows what the Brains Trust was doing putting the fix together, but that means that everybody's schedule here in Victoria is opened up. 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 7 p.m. up in Queensland. For Queensland Lions, Gold Coast Knights, match the round, Simon Smale on the call. What else would you rather be doing, Athos? Melbourne Derby?
No. No, no, no. But yeah, Simon, thank you so much for joining us this morning, and we wish you the best of luck and hope to hear from you very, very soon as well.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. Anytime. Real pleasure. Thanks very much.
Simon Smale joining us there this morning on Breakfast. If you missed any of that preview of the upcoming season, you can head over to the FNR Spotify or Apple podcast and listen to that in full.
Yeah, Athos, I think we'll take a short break. We've got our themed theme of the week coming up on the other side.
Off the crossbar! And it doesn't go in! Up like a salmon, a spawning salmon.
Oh, 30-1. I don't see you or Robbie on it.
You love rainbows and ponds and things like that. The morning mist. It's what it sounds like, Speedy.
You're listening to Breakfast on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
It was great chatting to NPL Queensland commentator Simon Smale, an in-depth preview of that league, which kicks off this Friday. And considering all Victorian games are on Friday night, you'll have the whole weekend to watch NPL Queensland, a massive game Saturday night between the Queensland Lions and the Gold Coast Knights, two sides with massive ambitions this season. it was amazing hearing about the Gold Coast Derby and how that just becomes all the more enticing and captivating this season, given the coaching controversy and all the like. It's what we like about football. It's all that rivalry and subplots that make all these local derbies so great.
And I tell you what, Athos, Queensland, if you like goals, you'll like NPL Queensland because it is a ridiculously high-scoring league. They don't believe in defending up there for some reason. I mean, that's part of the reason why Andy Pengelly was able to crack a half century in 2019.
What were those stats? 50 goals in 32 games.
This was a cup and league. So in the league, he scored 41 in 26.
Yep.
And
so that's 2 goals a game, just about.
Yep, pretty much. And in the cup, 11 in 8. So that's brilliant. 52 in 34 in 2019. 1-2 for Lion City Sailors in a very short stint. Decided to return home due to the pandemic, which was probably a wise move. And 14-15 with Peninsula Strikers, Peninsula Power, I should say, last season. He is a striker for Peninsula Power.
Yes.
Even while carrying a niggling injury. So his overall goal scoring stats since he broke through into NPL Queensland in 2017 is 83 goals in 82 games, Athos.
I remember he scored in the FFA Cup against Melbourne City as well.
Yes,
he did. Scored 2 that day. A-League clubs, look out if you need a striker.
I mean, you know, Brisbane Roar aren't exactly short of attacking options.
No.
But it can never hurts to get yourself a guy who scores a goal a game.
Exactly. And, well, they haven't scored in a few weeks now, Brisbane. So maybe they could throw a life or maybe a contract Andy Pengilly's way. Josh, it is time for our team of the week because we are running out of time. If you missed our preview with Simon Smail of NPL Queensland, head over to the FNR Spotify or Apple. But it's time for our team of the week. We teased earlier that it would be in relation to or a team filled with players who returned from big injuries or even life-threatening injuries as well. So we'll reel them off. Who do we have in goals? It's perhaps the most obvious choice. Goal?
Petr Cech. Such a traumatic head injury, not once but twice, Athos. And he wore the famous skull cap padding for the rest of his time after shattering his skull in a couple of places. And he continued to have an outstanding career for Chelsea and Arsenal and still to this day, Athos, plays hockey, ice hockey, for a semi-professional team in goals.
Might need a thicker helmet for that.
Yeah, I think so. I think he does have the proper hard hat material, but he still has his brain function, clearly, because he's doing the business for Chelsea in a backroom role, very important role. Liaising between sort of the club hierarchy and the coaching staff.
A fantastic career, as you mentioned, across Europe's biggest clubs. Won some pretty nice pieces of silverware as well in Europe and in England. We've gone a back three today, a very good back three, if I may say. Eric Abidal, his story is well-renowned. His comeback was sensational. He's, of course, working in the Barcelona backroom staff, but perhaps we'll focus more on his football career and his return after that, again, a life-threatening cancer scare.
Yeah, it was liver cancer, and he underwent surgery, came back to lift the European Cup, and they actually did let him lift it, even though he wasn't captaining the side at that point, because it was just so emotional for everybody involved to see him back out on the field. So that's incredible. And He beat it twice. So, you know, if you needed any proof that it can be done, Eric Abidal is the man.
Next to him in the heart of the fence is John Kudrumbas, who recovered from thyroid cancer stage one as well. A big comeback from him. He is, of course, playing for the Newcastle Jets. We've
and
had him
starting,
on FNR.
Starting week in, week out. So a very scary situation, but they caught it early and he's come back really strong. So.
And, of course, the last of our defenders is Luke Shaw, one of the brightest prospects in English football. He was part of that 2014 World Cup squad. I think he was the youngest player in that whole tournament. So they obviously rated him very highly as a youngster. And then a year later suffered that horrific leg break, which took him so long to recover from. And it's only really now that we're seeing the best of Luke Shaw again.
Yeah, it was a really horrific injury against PSV, I think it was, in the Champions League. Horrible tackle and horrible leg break. And he's taken his time to get back to his best form. But I think with a little bit of pressure behind him in the form of Alex Telles coming in, he's really gotten a bit of a kick up the arse this season. And he's playing as well as he ever has. So I don't think for the last few years, I don't think the problem was necessarily his body, Athos. I think it might have been up here. And it seems as if that's no longer an issue.
Fantastic. And they're doing quite well, Manchester United. We'll finish in the top four, still in the champion. Oh, no, they're in the Europa League at the moment. Big game against AC Milan coming up, and he'll have his hands full with that Rossoneri front third, I'm sure. In the midfield, we've got a five-man midfield. Aaron Ramsey, who would get injured just about every week, it felt, but is back at Juventus doing wonderful things. Johnny Warren, who, remarkably enough, was probably the first person to come back from an ACL.
That's the legend anyway.
Here it is, at least.
Yeah, he's definitely one of the first people to ever successfully return to a high level of football after an ACL injury, and that was to come back for the 1974 World Cup.
And he was like the oldest player in that side. He was 34, 35. So to come back at that age from an ACL when not even a 27-year-old had done it before, it's crazy stuff.
And he didn't really have the benefit of modern medical science either. He didn't have a lot of support even of the time he was doing it himself. There's a lot of like kind of documentary real footage of him kind of just running in the streets in the suburb where he lived and doing his own rehab. So it's an extraordinary tale.
And now this next one is an extraordinary one too, quite inspirational if you're an Italian football fan. Francesco Totti, I think, broke his fibula just months out from the 2006 World Cup and persevered and played all seven games of that tournament, lifting the World Cup trophy with metal plates in his leg. So extraordinary from him. This next one, perhaps not as well known as the rest, but Ivan Klasnic, who had a kidney failure and was forced into two kidney transplants and returned playing Werder Bremen, Bolton Wanderers. A fantastic story, very inspirational stuff from Ivan Klasnic. And of course, finishing off the midfield is Santi Cazorla, a former Malaga, and of course, an Arsenal great back at Villarreal this season. And he, of course, has suffered some major setbacks along the way too.
Yeah, the doctors told him he might never walk again, let alone play, but he's come back. It's absolutely extraordinary. And is he at Villarreal still? I thought he went to the Middle East. Yeah, he's at Al Sadd with Xavi now this year. But he came back to play a really significant role at Villarreal last season and was in great shape before he went to the Middle East for a big payday and catching up with some Spanish colleagues.
Absolutely. Who wouldn't want to be coached by Xavi at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, they play some sensational football in the is it the Qatar Stars League? I think it is. Yeah,
and he was actually, it seems like he's really enjoying himself too, because he just knocked back Barcelona casually. The time isn't right for him yet. I'm sure he'd want to go when it's a bit rosier over at the Catalan Giants. Up front, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who is one of the rare cases where he too did his ACL, but it healed by itself because it is Zlatan after all, and was back running and playing within 6 months.
And there were stories about his knee and the doctors saying, "We've never seen anything like it before. This is a superhuman knee." It may be part of the Zlatan PR machine, but still, that injury recovery is insane.
But, I mean, it's amazing that it just happened to Zlatan too, like of all people to recover from, or to recover by himself from
an
ACL.
Didn't he say something like lions don't recover like humans or something
like
that?
There was something like that. Well, maybe there is. I mean, that sort of Chuck Norris aura that hangs around Zlatan well and truly exists. And, of course, rounding off our team is Jibril Cissé, who we all loved his blonde hair and blonde beard when he was at QPR. He was even playing in Greece. I think he did very, very well playing there for Olympiacos, one of the big sides there. But he broke his left leg 1 year, and then I think the next year broke his right leg. So two massive breaks early in his career, and has since come back and has done wonderful things in England and everywhere he has gone. So that is our team of the week, our medical team of the week, who have fought on after major setbacks and have returned, and for some of these players gone to even greater heights, especially for guys like Zlatan, who did not let an ACL, which would ruin most careers, interrupt his.
Yes, and inspired by the revelation the other day that Rebecca Stott has been diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma, which is a very treatable disease, but it is still cancer, so very serious stuff. She's really fronting up in the most brave, inspirational way possible, and I think is an example to not only, you know, footballers, but just anybody for how to deal with this kind of adversity. And FNR, everybody here and everybody in the football community in Australia and New Zealand wishes her all the best with her recovery, and we can't wait to see her back out on the pitch in 2023.
Yes, she has earmarked that as her, not as her return, but she'd love to be there for that historic occasion where Australia and New Zealand, the country of her birth, will host the Women's World Cup.
And a little bit of Twitch interaction. We love it when you comment. Sardine10's come through on our earlier discussion in the show saying, big call, McLaren is a natural goal scorer, super player. McLaren for me, easily.
So that was about our
McLaren versus
over
Fornaroli. I still maintain that I would rather have Fornaroli for his all-around play, not just the pure goal scoring. But, you know, I acknowledge that it may not be a popular opinion.
Well, it sort of depends what kind of player you prefer and what the team needs. Mm. And I guess you made the case that Melbourne City could probably use Fornaroli more than they could use McLaren. So, well, interesting to see the thoughts of City fans. I'm sure you and Lockie will discuss this further tonight on the Full 90. We've got a whole host of programs tonight. The State of Our Football Nation from 5 p.m. with ex-Victory board member Richard Wilson to join us. So I'm sure that'll be a very good chat. If You Know Your History is back after a week off. Paul and Ian in the studio from 6 before Josh and Lockie round us off with the Full 90 from 7 p.m. That's all the time we've got for you this Thursday morning. Be sure to check out our chat with Simon Smail on the podcast. But from Athos and Josh, it is goodbye for now. Have a great day in football.
Off the crossbar! And it doesn't go in! Up like a salmon, a spawning salmon.
Oh, 30-1. I don't see you or Robbie on it.
You love rainbows and ponds and things like that. The morning mist. It's what it sounds like, Speedy.
You're listening to Breakfast on FNR. Football Nation Radio.